Welcome back. Today we're delving into some research from Osaka Prefecture University in Japan.
They're exploring a new way of looking at how we read, a novel approach.
And they call this new field reading activity recognition, right?
That's right. And it's a fascinating departure from traditional document analysis.
Because instead of focusing on the document itself, this research looks at the reader's experience, their brain activity, while reading.
Exactly. They're trying to understand not just what we read, but how our brains respond to different kinds of material.
And one of the things that struck me about this research is their use of EEG.
It's a much more accessible technology than something like fMRI, which requires, well, you know, those big, expensive machines.
And using a more widely available technology like EEG makes this research a lot more, well, relevant to the real world.
Certainly. They actually used commercially available EEG devices for this study, which opens up some intriguing possibilities for the future.
So let's talk about the study itself. They conducted two main experiments, right?
Yes, two. In the first one, they wanted to see if an EEG could tell what a person was reading, whether it was a scientific paper, a manga comic, a novel, or even if they were just daydreaming.
So they were looking for distinct brainwave patterns for each of those activities.
Precisely. They even had a doing nothing category as a baseline to compare against the active reading tasks.
And what did they find? Were they able to differentiate between those different mental states?
Well, with one participant, the EEG was surprisingly accurate at identifying the different tasks.
That's pretty remarkable. But of course, with a sample size of one, it's hard to draw any firm conclusions.
Absolutely. That's why they expanded the participant pool in their second study.
And what did they investigate in the second experiment?
So in the second one, they had three participants, and this time they focused on distinguishing between reading and non-reading activities.
Such as?
Things like drawing, listening to music, or watching videos, for example. Activities people engage in that don't involve reading, you see.
So they wanted to be sure that the EEG could differentiate between the brain actively engaged in reading versus processing other types of information.
Yes, precisely. And the EEG was quite effective at that, at separating the reading tasks from the non-reading tasks, although there was a nuance to the results.
A nuance. Tell me more.
The EEG could consistently tell when someone was reading and when they weren't, but the accuracy in identifying the specific content they were reading, that varied from person to person.
So individual differences in how our brains process information come into play.
It seems so, yes.
Which makes sense when you think about it. Some people love fiction. Some gravitate towards scientific journals. Some devour biographies.
Yes.
We all have our preferences.
And these preferences, it seems, could be reflected in our brain activity, in the way our brains respond to different types of text.
And speaking of reflecting, the researchers actually included some visuals in their paper, figures 3 and 5, I believe, which show these different brainwave patterns.
They do. They provide a visual representation of how our brains don't respond to all written material in a uniform way.
It's one thing to talk about it, but to actually see those different patterns.
It really highlights the complexity of the reading process, wouldn't you say? Even if we're not consciously aware of it, our brains are working hard to decode and interpret the information we're taking in.
But I imagine there are challenges to this kind of research.
Oh, there are always challenges. One of the main ones they encountered was dealing with muscle movements. Even subtle ones, like tiny eye twitches, can create noise in the EEG data.
So it's like trying to have a conversation in a noisy room. It becomes harder to distinguish this signal from the noise.
An apt analogy. And they had to find ways to filter out that noise while still preserving the important brainwave data.
Which is no easy task. They don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak.
Precisely. And interestingly, they suggest that some types of muscle activity might actually be helpful in differentiating between reading styles.
You mean like how our eye movements might differ if we're skimming a text versus reading for comprehension?
Exactly. They propose that those subtle variations in muscle activity could hold valuable clues about how we engage with different types of reading material.
Fascinating. It seems they're just scratching the surface of what might be possible.
Indeed. And one of the possibilities they discuss is the concept of a reading life log. It's this idea of a comprehensive record of your reading history. But instead of just a list of books or articles, it would capture how you engaged with the text itself.
Now, that's an intriguing concept. But how would such a thing even be possible? What kind of technology are we talking about?
They suggest a combination of optical character recognition to identify the words and eye-tracking technology to follow your gaze. So the device would know not only what you were reading, but how long you spent on each word, creating this detailed map of your reading experience.
It does sound a bit futuristic, doesn't it? But it also raises some red flags for me regarding privacy. I mean, who would have access to this reading life log? And how would that information be used?
You make valid points. The technology to create such a log might still be a ways off, but the ethical implications are definitely something we need to consider carefully.
For sure. Now, this isn't the first research to look at the connection between brain activity and reading. How does this study differ from previous work in this area?
Well, a lot of the earlier research used fMRI, which is a much more complex and expensive technology, and it's often used in clinical settings, like for understanding reading disabilities or studying cognitive processes in a very controlled environment.
Whereas this study uses a more accessible technology, EEG, making it more applicable to everyday situations.
Exactly. Plus, they're really emphasizing the difference between their approach and traditional document analysis.
Which focuses on what the structure of the document, the keywords, that sort of thing.
Yes, the document as an object. But this research shifts the focus to the reader.
To their subjective experience of the text.
Precisely. And that has major implications for education, since we all learn differently.
It's about moving away from a one-size-fits-all model of education and towards something more personalized.
Imagine being able to see where students are getting bogged down in a text, or conversely, where their engagement really peaks.
It would be an incredible tool for educators. But it sounds like there's still a lot of work to be done. What are some of the limitations of this research, the areas they still need to explore?
Well, one obvious limitation is the small sample size. To really confirm their findings, they need to conduct larger scale studies with a more diverse group of participants.
And of course, there's the challenge of filtering out the noise from muscle movements in the EEG data.
Right. Making sure they're isolating the brain signals specifically related to reading. And then there's the question of those muscle movements themselves.
Because they might actually provide useful information.
Potentially. Figuring out which muscle signals are meaningful and which are just distractions is an ongoing challenge.
And they mentioned some other intriguing possibilities for this technology if they can overcome these challenges.
Yes, one that particularly stood out to me was the idea of combining their reading activity recognition technology with existing techniques for classifying emotions from EEG data.
So you'd be able to tell not just what someone's reading, but how they felt about it.
Exactly. Think about the potential for understanding the emotional impact of literature, or even for designing more effective marketing campaigns.
It's both exciting and a little bit unnerving, isn't it? On the one hand, you have this potential for amazing breakthroughs in education technology even. But on the other hand, you have to consider the ethical implications.
Absolutely. As with any powerful technology, we need to proceed with caution.
It's like we're stepping into the realm of science fiction, where technology can read our minds, or at least our emotions.
In a way, yes. It's both exciting and a bit daunting, this idea of technology becoming so intertwined with our inner lives.
And the researchers see applications for this technology beyond just analyzing individual reading.
Definitely. They talk about transforming how we interact with computers, making interfaces more responsive to our cognitive states.
So instead of just reacting to our commands, our devices could sense when we're getting frustrated or bored and adapt accordingly.
Imagine that. User interfaces that are not just intuitive, but actually empathetic to our mental state.
It would be a whole new way of interacting with technology. Though, of course, with all of this talk about reading our minds and emotions, the issue of privacy looms large.
It's crucial that we have those conversations about ethical guidelines and safeguards now, before this technology becomes even more advanced.
Absolutely. We need to make sure we're shaping this technology in a way that benefits society, not just opening the door to potential misuse.
It's a balancing act, isn't it, between fostering innovation and safeguarding human values.
Exactly. And that's where you, our listener, come in. As we venture further into this uncharted territory of brain-computer interaction, we need your voices to be part of the conversation.
We need to think critically about the implications of this research, the potential benefits and drawbacks.
And engage in thoughtful discussions about how we can ensure these technologies are developed and used responsibly.
The future is not something that just happens to us. It's something we create.
And that's what makes this research so compelling, so thought-provoking. It's not just about understanding how we read. It's about understanding ourselves and our place in an increasingly technological world.
And that's a conversation worth having.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the fascinating intersection of reading, the brain, and the future of technology.